Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge introduces incredible stories shared by women across the globe who have experienced the great heights of success and, at times, the agony of defeat. With a vision to impart wisdom and advice on how to tackle barriers and soar to new heights, the show uncovers different perspectives to help you find your inner strength and to power up your own voice so you can excel in life.
Welcome to Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Entrepreneurs are born every single day, but how many of them start as oncologists and then transition over to digital med industry entrepreneurs? Well, we have one with us today. Joining me on the show is Dr. Hannah Liu. She is the CEO and co-founder of OncoGambit, the first online personalized cancer treatment website. As CEO, Hannah manages operations, and she remains the core visionary for the company. Hannah has stayed true to her oncology background, but she's also found a new career as a tech guru, creating a platform that verifies cancer treatments and saves people time and money before getting a second opinion. Hannah, it's great to have you on my show. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Well, there's so many questions to ask you because it must be very different being an oncologist and then kind of making your way to entrepreneur. So maybe you can just share a little bit about your journey.
So I'm a practicing oncologist, specialized in breast cancers for 20 years. Besides seeing patients and treatment with for breast cancers, I'm also a clinical investigator for multiple early stage clinical trials. So that was my background. That's what I've been doing all my life. As technologies advance, and I find that a lot of patients have more difficulty getting to a certain medical center, and 85% of the patients don't live within or the academic center. And so one day it just, dawned on me, it's like, why can't we just bring these technologies, bring this knowledge and information to the patient at home, right? So a technology allow us to do that. So why don't we? So with that idea, I first have to formulate to see if it's doable. So I got together with a couple of software development, and we just kind of play around the idea and let's see if they can do, they can build a software for that. And I want to test if it works. And the minute I saw that it worked, I know that this is it, this is revolutionary for us to be able to bring the knowledge and the confirmation for the patient wherever they are, and they don't have to travel for hours waiting for hours to get that kind of opinion.
Absolutely. I mean, that makes so much sense, the time and the effort and having that you have information at your fingertips. How long did it take you to actually, you mentioned that you were working with the software people and the testing. What was that phase like? Was that a long process?
Oh, it took us 6 to 8 months to verify it. We got to build it. So from the technology part of it, it's doable, feasible. So it took us 6 to 8 months to verify it. But then it took us another 6 months or so of how to break down the message, the vocabularies.
Right.
Because I need to translate everything into English, right?
Oh, yes.
So how to say it that makes sense, So that's part took us 6 months with my work with the nurse practitioners and also with other oncologists, and we say, guys, listen, how to say this thing, because in person, I guess even if you meet your doctor in the office and if you don't understand something, you can just say, hey, all the look on your face,
right,
and tell us that, okay, we need to slow down here. But, how do we say it on paper for people to understand and continue to move forward? And I think along the way, it became our passion that We don't just want to treat the patient. We really want the patients to understand about their cancer, understand how is this treatment derived. You know, it's not something that come out of the blue. You know, we did have 30 years of research to get to this point.
Right.
And trying to say all of that without overwhelming the patient is I find that it's become another challenge.
Absolutely. And also, I mean, as a doctor or practicing oncologist with patients that come to you, the time that you need to spend with them isn't always, it's almost like a never enough time. So do you feel that the technology actually gives them more time and they can find out their answers and kind of dig deeper? Does that play a role in this at all?
Yes. I believe so, in the sense that if you, we have like pages and pages of pure education, pure content. So we believe that if cancer patients just read this and have a basic understanding, they can have we want to elevate the conversation that they will have with a treating physician. You know, you can go back to your doctor, your treating doctors, and talk at a higher level. In that way, you can get more out of the visits, right? And you can sit and talk 5 hours, but that is not realistic for any doctors out there, especially these days and age, if you can have 15 minutes. You know, so we want that by bringing these information, learn about these and go back, you can get more out of the visits.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. I don't know if I read this or maybe I just felt this way, but it almost seems like you're demystifying what people hear about cancer and treatments. Would you agree? And if so, why?
Yes. I think that when patient hear the letter C, right, everything shut down. You know, I have patient told me I'm on and on for an hour and they said, I haven't heard anything after you said I have cancer.
Right.
You know? So I think that we basically take it and break it down. And I give an example about breast cancer. So the patient comes and then they can go home and say, well, this is the treatment I get. And most of the time it's like, oh, okay. And they talk to another breast cancer patient and they get a different treatment or the same treatment. And you will wonder like why. So we break it down. We say, okay, the reason you get the certain treatments had nothing to do with you, it your tumor, right? So as for breast cancer as of today, we treat you based only on 3 molecular characteristics. Basically, there's a 3 protein receptors on the tumor, the estrogen receptor, the progesterone receptor, and the Herceptin, the HER2 new protein receptor. So as long as your tumor express any of this, the treatment will be guided according to that. So you can talk to another patient, and if they can tell you, oh, my has the estrogen, then you know exactly that they will get some sort of a hormonal therapy, right?
Right.
And then another will say, okay, I have HER2. Then you will get some sort of Herceptin. And if you don't have any of these, then the only choice you have will be chemo. So that's the way that we treat cancer. And that's the way that the oncologists communicate with each other in terms of what treatment to give based on the tumor itself. So that's how we break it down and help the patient to understand that why you get this and you're not getting the other, you know, because sometimes I have patients say like, why my friend get this and I don't get that.
Right. And that could be really confusing thinking that, well, is my friend getting a better treatment and maybe my doctor's not doing the right thing.
Right. So
that can lead to more anxiety.
Right. And then another thing is like, you know, in terms of the hormonal therapy, when you have an estrogen receptor, some of our treatment lasts for 10 years, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of time I have patient come in, you know, you get on the pill, you have all these side effects. And they was like, I don't know why I'm taking this. And then after I explain to them, because your tumor has the receptor and you are as a woman, we have estrogen. So the pill will just block the estrogen from binding to the receptor. after they understand the mechanism behind it, the compliance is going up. You know, now they know, okay, the minute I stop taking the pill, that means that my estrogen in my body is the natural hormone in your bodies, right? Will bind to some receptor and that generate cancer. So by taking the pill, I stop that process. And when you understand it, I find that fortunately for me, if I understand that, I would be more compliant. And we find that the patient will be more compliant, and there's some study have shown that as well. And it's good that you mentioned anxiety. A lot of patients are very concerned and very anxious about whether they get the best treatment. Mm-hmm. Right? That's one of the first questions. Our system basically aggregate 1,100 cancer experts' opinions on the treatment for that cancer. They all agree on it. Right? We don't always agree with everything, right? But the majority, if anything, say the majority agree to certain thing, and that became the best, the most recommended. So that's how we the software is built around.
That's really interesting. That's a lot of experts on your site. So, you know, how are you kind of, what's your message to, I guess, the other oncologists and, you know, I don't know if you use other types of doctors, general doctors, to kind of get on board with this? Because it's so important to have those experts.
Right. My colleagues, the oncologists, they all like this, right? In a sense that we always feel that when you have some serious illnesses, and cancer is qualified as it, you always feel better if you have a confirmation from another doctor, mm-hmm. right? And it kind of validates you. And as an oncologist, we're already used to this. We always, if patient asks for a second opinion or want to check with something else, we always open to that. A lot of time patient misunderstood that, mm-hmm. you know, they're afraid that they offended us, but that's not true. We agree that, the more hands that come together to take care of your cancer, it will be better for you. So they are on board about this. The general doctors, they are a lot of time, you know, patients come back and ask their questions. So if we have a source for them that they can guide the patient to, and they say, okay, because sometimes it's not easy just to say, okay, you don't like this oncologist I send you. I don't know another one, right? But now that you have a platform where you can send the patient to, they all welcome this. Mm-hmm. So I think that And the beauty of it is they can do it anywhere at home. You know, you can live in the middle of nowhere, the little village. As long as you have internet, you can get on and read about it. So I think that's why it's accessibility to everybody. That's an important piece of what we're doing.
Right, you're getting that expert advice. I'm really glad that you talked about how the oncologist, the doctor welcomes the second opinion, because I think, you know, being a consumer myself, it's almost like you don't want to insult the doctor. And mostly when you hear somebody say, oh, I'm getting a second opinion, you kind of have something stuck in your mind that, well, that doctor didn't say the right thing or didn't do the right thing, but that's not it at all. It's because you're dealing with a serious illness. So the more information, and like you said, if the patient doesn't understand or doesn't get it right, that second opinion really validates what the first physician said.
Exactly. And I think it's also reinforced or give the patient peace of mind. Mm-hmm. And we've already find that when they get to that point, they said, okay, this is the best, and I'll just have to receive the treatment. And they are, you know, it's easier for them to tolerate the side effects of the treatment, in a sense that, you know, they know this is that they need to go through. Versus, it's always have this concern in the back of their mind about, okay, do I go through all of this for any reason? Is it, you know, is this the right one to do? So that's peace of mind. That's why we try to get to.
Yeah, no, that's really important. And you made mention that for the consumer, and I'm feeling that most consumers are very much connected. They can jump on their, I don't know if it's a laptop, a desktop, but definitely their smartphones to access anything. But what about the physicians? Because I'm kind of feeling, and not in your case at all, or maybe many of your peers, but that doctors are slower to embrace technology and that this would be so far removed from anything that they would ever imagine or be a part of.
You know, medicine is like a 2,000 years old
right.
business, right? We're still using the stethoscope. We're still using the pager.
I know.
To get to each other.
Right.
So there's a lot of, you know, over the last, I don't know, 5 years or so, we're trying to get to the electronic record, right, area. And the problems that I find and a lot of my colleagues are the same was that a lot of the system, especially the medical record system right now, is built by the IT, by the technology, you know, software people. And they're not built by physician. And so it's very, very not user-friendly for the doctors. And as a result of that, it actually, instead of helping us right now, it's actually adding more stress to us.
Oh, yeah. You know?
So that's another reason I think like these healthcare technology, these healthcare application has to be built by the physician, you know, because we are the user, right? We are the end users.
Absolutely.
So it has to be built for us because I was involved in one of the, when we first start want to build the system. So they asked me as, you know, a advisor. And whatever I say, it always came back at, no, we cannot build that. No, we cannot build that. Like, you
that's
build
a tough
it
process.
From, it's a, you build from scratch. What do you mean by you can't
do it? What do you mean you can't do it?
You know, so that's the problem. And then they build something that it's frustrated for us to use. So until, you know, but I hope that the new generation of doctors, you know, will be more technology driven and will be a leader in to build all these applications for the doctors. And also keep it in mind, more than 50% of the current practicing oncologists or, you know, general doctors as well are more than 50 years old. So they also, you know, on the different, the other spectrum of technology. But I believe that the new generation will be very familiar with technology and will hopefully will lead it to a more fruitful and more you know, like user friendly for us so that it can help us to be a better doctors instead of hinder us.
Absolutely. I mean, this new generation has been through disruption, so, you know, coming into the field as a doctor, they certainly will have different needs and see things a different way, and hopefully will make a difference for consumers and what they're going through. What do you think, is it, when it comes to technology and the new breed, is it more the will and the want, or is it something that has to be incorporated into the institution that's teaching the doctors? Well, I guess what I'm getting at is, what are the chances of the new breed actually having the more hands-on and getting what they need to help patients?
I'm involved in a lot of groups right now, of course, healthcare and technology. Mm-hmm. And from what I'm seeing right now, within the next 5 years, you're going to see the significant change that getting into healthcare. You know, patients will demand it, right?
Yeah.
And we know more and more about cancer. Patient is no longer on one medication anymore. Some people on 20 different medications.
Oh,
and these need some sort of, I believe that the computer will help us to keep track of all these things. And people, you know, personal sensors are very common. People you can check your heart rate, you can check your blood pressure, blood sugar, 200 times a day on your own. You know, this information is beginning getting back to the clinic. Mm-hmm. And I'm seeing all sort of software being developed. It's like, I give you an example. Like, they're building, what do you call it, the software that can read a mammogram, right? The digital mammogram. So the software is of today, it's still being developed. It's 85% accurate. So it compare that to a brand new radiologist. The software is as good as that radiologist. It's a little bit less than the experienced one.
Right.
But it can read 30 times more than a radiologist.
Oh, you know,
faster. So it can replace 30 radiologists.
Oh, my goodness.
So that software is being developed so that it's getting more accurate. So that's what we see. So soon, the future of medicine, you're going to see more and more of all of these sort of, I would call it a computer-aided for the physician. You know, they help us to be a better doctor. A lot of people out there, and a lot of doctors as well, believe that, oh, well, you're going to get all the machines to replace doctors. I don't believe so.
No.
You know, I don't believe that at all. I believe that the machine will come in and make our life better so that we spend more time with the patient, because the machine will do a lot of, you know, the basic work for us. I don't need to instead of me, I'm giving an example, trying to collect all these data. If the machine can do it for me, then I'm talking to the dog, to the patient, don't you think? I have a totally different opinion about this.
No, I like your opinion. I think it's helping to be a better doctor. So, Hannah, I'm just going to ask you to hold your thoughts for a moment. We're going to take a super quick break, give some love to our sponsor. When we return, Hannah's going to share the skills she's learned as a doctor and how they've sort of transferred over to her tech venture.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Segment 2 is coming right up.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communication and innovative technology. Pure Performance Communications works with businesses to move their audiences from awareness to action and impact by offering a digital marketing roadmap. Let us help you foster deeper engagement and forge stronger relationships along the way. Visit us at pureperformancecom.com. That's pureperformancecom with 2 M's.com.
Now, back to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. Welcome back to the show. I was just chatting with Hannah, the CEO of OncoGambit, and she was sharing her transition from oncologist to digital med industry entrepreneur. Okay, Hannah, so you know what it is all about being a better doctor. That's kind of where we left it off. And now I just want to pivot a little bit and talk about you as the entrepreneur. So what do you like the most about being an entrepreneur, and maybe what do you like the least?
Okay. So what I like the most, what being entrepreneur is, that the ability to see something that you are passionate about, and you have an idea, and you go out and carry it out. And I find that part very inspiring. And I love every minute of that. Together with the freedom of being able to execute things without having to clear with multiple upper levels.
Right.
So I love that part. The least likely part so far of this being an entrepreneur for me right now is I'm entering into an unknown territory, right? It's uncharted.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a lot of, it's not clear cut, right? So you can do different way. So by exploring and see if thing doesn't work, I backtrack and do another way. So I find that's a little bit a little bit uncertain, in a sense that it's not as clear cut for somebody with a scientific background.
Right.
So I find that a little bit uncertain, that's all.
Absolutely. And I would think with a scientific background, it's almost you're data focused and you see that clear path. So sometimes when it doesn't look so clear, right? And yes. It's never clear for entrepreneurs. But you did say something about, having this passion, seeing something, right? It's there and you have a passion and carrying it out. But how hard is it? And I think a lot of entrepreneurs face this. How hard is it when the people around you don't see that or get your passion and you kind of have to educate? Have you experienced that at all?
Yes, I do. And that's one of that was just like, oh, you build a machine to replace us, that's from some of the colleagues. And then from some of the consumer or patients, and they kind of like, oh, so do I have to do everything? So I'm trying to have to explain the vision, I'm trying to, I'm actually love that part because I like to educate, right? I'm a sort of like an educator myself, because of being who I am, sometimes I have to teach medical students, the interns and the residents and
yes.
the fellows. So you already in as a role as an educator. So for me, doing what I'm doing right now, explain to people what I'm trying to do. I see myself as an educator as well. And we are knowing that healthcare and technology are at the beginning right now. So I see myself as a pioneer in this field. So explanation, a lot of trying to get people to see what I see. I find that very rewarding, actually. I enjoy it. Well, I should be. Otherwise,
exactly.
It's very rough, right?
Rough road. But you have so much passion, you're going to make sure you keep going down that road. I don't know. I feel like you just answered a question that was in my mind because I wanted to know whatever we do, there's always skills that we're developing. And so you were developing skills as an oncologist, and then all of a sudden you're an entrepreneur and what transfers over. But you said something about how being a doctor, you're teaching when you're with the residents. And now as an entrepreneur, you're still teaching to educate everybody who maybe doesn't see your path as clearly. Or is there anything else along those lines that you see skills transfer over to being an entrepreneur today?
Well, I think that being patient is what I think. If you talk to every entrepreneur, they're gonna say that, right? Work hard and be patient, and that's that is the same characteristic that you get from being a doctor to an entrepreneur. We all work hard and be patient. Sometimes it's for me when I treat cancer, it might take me months or years to see if these treatments working or not. And to get to where we are, years and years of education, so that patient right there. Being an entrepreneur, you also have to slowly every day, just one step at a time, mm-hmm. move closer to the vision that you see. And that requires patience. I know that it's not going to happen overnight. Any success was like 10 years in the making, right? So I know that as long as every day I see I do something, considered as improvement towards mm-hmm. from yesterday and moving closer to where I am, I'm happy. So to me, those are the shared characteristics from both professions.
So you actually have a leg up You do. You have a leg up in this entrepreneurial game, because I don't know how many entrepreneurs are patient. I'm not sure. If we took a poll, because I find that entrepreneurs are very, you know, get it done, you know, at this pace that probably is not sustainable. But being that, you know, you come from the world of patients and treating cancer and very, very careful steps, that's a great skill to transfer over.
Yeah.
I think so.
Well, I have no other choice. I say, like, when I was, you know, I'm also, as I said earlier, I'm also an investigator, clinical investigator. Whenever I come with an idea about the new treatment, then I have to design a study, a protocol around it. It usually take about 2 years, and mm-hmm. have to go through, like, I don't know, probably 500 people to look at it and approve it, right? So that patience right there.
Yeah.
2 years to get an idea carried out to an actual clinical protocol, and then another 2 to 10 years to complete the protocol. So yeah. there you are.
That's patience. But something else just clicked in my mind too. So here you are as an oncologist, and your work on the clinical side as well. You said coming up with new ideas. So it's that innovation in medicine. You know, that is the entrepreneur. The entrepreneur has the idea, the innovation solves the problem, and that's exactly what you're doing. Fascinating. So just another question, because whatever you do in business, we're all looking to be leaders and thought leaders. What do you think are some of the most important characteristics for leaders today?
In anything, right? In any thing, politics or economics?
No, anything.
Medicine. I think being a leader, a good leader, and I'm still learning, is the capability to listen, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's like, your idea is not the best one. Let's listen to see what others have to say. And that's something I find myself that I'm still trying to master, you know, ability to listen to others before you make your decision, especially right now. I mean, the position is the CEO. It's my decision at the end that people have to carry out. So I want to make sure that that's the best decision. And so able to listen to people around you and take into the constructive criticism is one of the best sides of being a leader, I believe. The second that I find that it needs to be that important is that after you make that decision, you need to be decisive. You know, mm-hmm. you need to make that decision. And then after you make that decision, then you need to be follow through with that and until it's done. So I find those are the two that I think will be a better leadership, I think.
Yeah, and it's closely connected. So if you're listening and if you can take that constructive feedback, it's what you do with it and making the decision. So I agree. I think those are two really important characteristics. And we're all learning. I hope that if anybody thinks that they are the perfect business leader or they've got it down pat in the leadership area, I would worry about that, because I think we always have to be improving our leadership capabilities and characteristics. Let's talk a little bit about the actual launch of your platform. So I'm sure that after you went through all of the testing phases and you fixed all the bugs and you got the language down pat, how did it feel to launch, and were there any challenges that happened after launch?
So we launched and we got good feedback. You know, we got a lot of people interested, and it's already spread to about 99 countries now.
Oh, that's great.
So it's already a global form. And we got a lot of feedback from patients or consumers, you call, who said, okay, so we go in, we get educated, they love it. And a lot of them say, well, within a couple of hours of reading this, it's like a journey. Like I have a patient who, you know, her husband went through prostate cancer for 2 years. And so when she read everything that we listed, she's like, oh yeah, these are the things that I collected over the last 2 years. So within an hour, she got like an ally or completely understand what had been going on over the last 2 years for herself and her husband. So she loves that. The challenge, so that's where we are. But then we get a lot of all the feedback in the sense that, you know, so what? We don't just want to go in, you know, read about our cancers, get the treatment and disappear. They want to have a continuous relationship with Uncle Gambit, right? They want to be able to come back and forth. So we like, so now we expanded it. We just about to launch in a couple of weeks. You know, we have the personal, we call wellness coaching, where the patient can come in. Because what we've seen right now is when you have a cancer diagnosis, you're very distressed. And,
yes.
You know, there's a lot of stressors. So we're trying to design a six-week coaching program that help patients to deal with those stressors. If we can take those stressors down, you know, give them some tool. Because, you know, having cancer will change your life. You know, even if you cure, it still change you to be something maybe different from where you were, right?
Right.
So that's one part that we bring in. Another part that we plan to bring in, and we bring it in under the, you know, in a form of a virtual reality software, interactive. With the virtual human. You can see now I'm become a machine.
That's amazing.
In terms of talking to the patients about nutritional guidance and how to build muscle mass, you know, there's data have shown that, and there's another that I just read yesterday, the day before, that, you know, even like years after, within a year after diagnosed with cancer, people just stop moving. They just stop doing things that they used to do. So we want to create all these virtual human with the software that interact with the patient, that acting like a personal nutritionist and a personal trainer for them to work out at home, to try to be healthier, you know, and a constant hand-holding.
Yeah.
Sort of situation that you cannot fight it in your doctor. Don't expect your doctor to do this.
No, absolutely not.
but this can be done at home anywhere. You know, a constant reminder, like, you know, to enjoy life, to be healthier, to move, you know, when you move around. And those actually, our data have continued to show that by eating healthier and by moving around, exercise or, you know, be active, those actually prevent the cancer from coming back as well. So we want to build that. And that's the way, I guess, we will keep the patient as a community, you know, connected with Uncle Gambit, because these exercise and these are routine things, these are regimens that we develop. And I work with another oncologist who's passionate about this aspect of cancer care. Will give the cancer survivors, you know, something that to keep them moving, to feel better, I think. And then we'll do a little bit part of our contribution to their well-being.
I love that. I love that you're building this community. And I do have a question about when you mentioned the wellness coaching, and I know it's just kind of you're rolling out with that. Is that more for the coping of, you know, learning that you have cancer, or is there something about the wellness coaching that actually puts you in a mindset that helps your body to heal or helps you, you know, when you lower the stressors, maybe you can handle the treatment better. Is there anything behind that?
Yes. The data show that when you're less stressed, your immune system is stronger. And and there's that strong data to support that, number one. Number two, that the newer treatment we have right now is immune therapy, right? Mm-hmm. So that basically what it does is we basically, your immune system, you know, you have the immune system and you have the break to hold up or to kind of taper your immune system. So that's why. But when you you're having cancer, the immune system, the part that will take care of the cancers, is disabled. But we finally figured out how to use it. We disengage the brake for your immune system. So that's why now your immune system is like, it had like two, it has a pedal and it had the brake, right? So the pedal part, when it no longer work, we release the brake, then now your immune system will act up and that will control cancer. So that's a newer treatment for cancer. So by decreasing stress, activate that immune system for you. And that will help to control cancer. So there's data, very strong scientific data to support that. But in our six-week program, the first thing we do is we're trying to identify what is that stress you after having cancer. And it's not the same. Some people feel the financial part is the
sure.
Some feel like, body image is a stress, especially in breast cancer patients. Another feel like, you know, anxieties about survival, whether I survive this, and family, I have less time to take care of my children. So those are different stress. And that's why we try to sort out which one that be your top three, right? And after you identify that top three, we'll find the tools to help you to control it, to bring it down, to change your mindsets about certain things, you know, and bring it down. Our goal is to see if within 6 weeks we can take it down to at least 40-50%. That's something that we're trying to see if we can achieve. And certainly it will be a lifelong process, you know, a few more weeks or a couple of months. But my hope is that by giving the patient the tool, they can use that tool for the rest of their life, in everything in life, actually. And that's my hope.
Well, I'm amazed at what you're rolling out and your immune therapy. It would seem that everybody who has a cancer diagnosis would want to incorporate this type of therapy into their treatment program. So I'm sure that you've learned, you know, a lot. Maybe you could just share something that you've learned as an entrepreneur that maybe you didn't know when you were practicing oncology before.
You know, there's so much to learn. You know, I learned how to, first of all, I meet a lot of very interesting people. And learn and other successful entrepreneur, and I'm amazed by everything that people do, you know. So because I live in my little bubble before, so I enjoy that part, to meet people on a different path, and everybody and the entrepreneur, they all have this passion that they have some problem they're trying to solve. A very little thing from every little aspect of life. So I find that very interesting. What I learned is that, you know, now that you have to go out and you have to convince others about what you do. I think that part, because I was a clinical investigator before, I have to convince people about my idea. So this is, I don't find this different from what I did before, but I'm talking to non-medical portion, and I think that part is different for me. And I learned a lot about how they see things, that I didn't think that it was an issue before. And it was like, well, I don't get what you say because I don't know what you're saying. Mm-hmm. So that's why I have to explain a lot. And that's the education part going in. So I find that it's challenging. I think I still find a lot of challenging in terms of the messaging. What should I say that for, say, if I bump into somebody in the street, how do I say that? In a couple of sentences.
Right, that 30 seconds or less.
Right.
A quick pitch if you're in the elevator. Right. You're going to get off.
And that's something that, I'll be sure. Like, I can never say anything in 30 seconds. I'm learning.
Well, that's okay. I think that's the journey, keep learning and keep problem solving and doing what you're doing. Just one last easy question. Where can Women Worldwide listeners find out more about you and your work?
Well, in our website, www.oncogambit.com. And we have our bio there, how to contact us there, and a lot of information. And we also have a blog that we try to write every week about what news in oncology is, what you need to do, all sort of goodies there that people can find. It's mostly lots of content.
Well, excellent. Hannah, thank you so much for sharing your journey with us. We just learned a lot from you, and you really taken your passion to a whole new level, and you are quite the inspiration. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Deidre.
You're welcome. And I also want to thank all of you for tuning into Women Worldwide. Until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.